This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
You're listening to the Momwell Podcast. Today, I am excited to welcome Lauren McGoodwin, CEO of Career Contessa, to the show. Lauren launched Career Contessa in 2013 out of her master's thesis project to close the gap in career development resources for women. Career Contessa now helps over 3 million women each year with their careers through content, online learning courses, and job listings. Motherhood has a way of changing us. And it really shouldn't be any surprise that it also changes the way we view our careers. I never would have imagined myself starting a platform or being a CEO. Instead, I started out walking the traditional path, checking boxes on my way to the career I thought was my dream job, being a therapist. And while I absolutely loved working with and helping my clients, when I got there, I felt this sense of stagnation. That sense only strengthened after becoming a mom and realizing that there were other passions I never even knew I had. But according to Lauren's book, Power Moves, this is a very common experience for millennials, especially moms. We were set out on a path to check boxes without ever considering what really mattered to us. And we were chasing a myth of something that never existed, the dream job. Today, Lauren and I discuss what causes career dissatisfaction, the problem with the dream job myth, why millennials in particular are vulnerable to this experience, and how motherhood often becomes the catalyst to question where we are in our careers. We also discuss working mom struggles and how to overcome them, along with how to break away from the dream job myth and turn instead to using small but strategic power moves in our daily lives to create the life and career we want. But before jumping in, I'd like to take a moment to talk about our Back to Work courses, created for those of you who are returning to work, recently returned to work, or have been back to work for a while but still find yourself carrying the mental load. Our three mini courses in this series are Dividing Household Labor According to Maternity Leave, Preparing Emotionally to Go Back to Work After Baby, and Deciding on Childcare After Maternity Leave. Each course contains practical, hands-on tools to ease your mental load and make the transition smoother. Head to momwell.com/shop to explore those mini courses. Now, let's hear my conversation with Lauren McGoodwin. Welcome to the Momwell Podcast, where we're committed to helping you cope with the load of motherhood. I'm your host, registered psychotherapist and founder of Momwell, Erica Jossa. At Momwell, we know that motherhood is hard, but care shouldn't be. We're committed to providing you with knowledge, tools, and support to navigate the challenges of motherhood. Our mission is to put moms back on the priority list and empower them to create a mental wellness toolbox free from judgment, fear, and shame. On the show, we'll be discussing topics such as postpartum depression, identity loss, the mental load of motherhood, and more. We'll be joined by experts, moms, and professionals who can offer advice, practical tips, relatable stories, and honest conversations. Here at Momwell, we believe that when a mom is well, a baby is well. So join us as we discuss the topics that matter to you with experts who get it. Together, we can redefine motherhood and change the way moms are treated. Lauren, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. I came across you via LinkedIn, which I'm super new to, by the way. I'm learning the norms. I'm more of an IG girly myself, so finding my way through. But came across you, your platform, and your work via LinkedIn. Excited to have you here with us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm happy we found each other on LinkedIn.
Yeah. Well, you're also all the platforms. You're like all the content, all the platforms, I feel like, how you show up and support moms in your community. How did the platform start for you? I feel like there's always this story of something that ignited passion there. And I'm curious how you came into Career Contessa.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, before Career Contessa came about, because it actually launched in 2013, in 2009, I graduated from college. Everyone can remember a time back then. And it was not a good time to be looking for a job. We were in a recession. And, you know, my expectations were kind of, you know, splattered right away of like, oh, you think you're going to graduate college and like, you know, take 3 months to travel before you start your job. You know, like I kind of have this like weird expectation that like 1 + 1 equaled 2 in career fulfillment. Like, yeah, just find a job with benefits. And like, not only was that hard to do, but like, it was really hard to also figure out like what I wanted to do. And so I had been an education major who had decided I didn't want to be a teacher. So long story short, I ended up moving to Los Angeles. I thought a bigger job market will fix things. It did not. And ended up getting a job as an admin assistant in higher education. Very grateful for that role. But I think in the interview, I absolutely knew this is not the place I want to see myself for the rest of my life. So like from the minute I got there, I kind of started thinking about, well, what is it that I want to do? And just became very obsessed with career development and people who do like their careers. What do they do? How did they figure that out? And then eventually I was working as his admin assistant. Somebody was absent one day. They asked me to go do, quote, recruiting for the university. Recruiting for a university is very different. They are recruiting people from 2-year like city colleges to transfer over to 4-year, but they call it recruiting. And that was actually truly like, I'm so thrilled that they did, because it really, I loved that part of my job. And so that is how I became interested in recruiting as a career in general. Became obsessed having informational interviews. I used actually LinkedIn, and I reached out to over 70 recruiters to try to have, I think I got like 30 informational interviews, which I like to share the numbers. I'm like, that's a less than 50% acceptance rate. And this is back in the days when people actually responded to you all the time on LinkedIn. So, So anyway, long story short, really those informational interviews and that journey made me realize what type of recruiter I wanted to be, what type of company. I was able to tailor my resume, my, you know, prep for a job interview in a much more successful way, and eventually landed the job working as a recruiting coordinator at Hulu. And I absolutely was not the most experienced person for the job, but I was definitely the most passionate person in that interview. I can guarantee you that. And so now that I was on the other side of the hiring table, I was also writing my master's thesis on millennial women and the lack of career resources. And it was sort of this perfect combination of like, here I am building my career. There's no women in leadership. I'm sort of looking for that role model. They're all mostly white males. And I get to be told, hey, you can write your master's thesis on anything you want. So I ended up researching kind of everything I could about the millennial generation, specifically millennial women. And the hypothesis at the time was that the millennial generation of women, we were going to be the largest population of women in the workforce ever before. And by 2020, we were going to make up more than 50% of the workforce. Had there not been a pandemic, that actually would have been correct. And so what I did in my thesis is I basically created like a prototype of a resource that I thought would help women with their career development. And that prototype eventually became Career Contessa. And I eventually left my job at Hulu in recruiting to work on Career Contessa full time, because, you know, everyone has to remember this is like pre-Lean In, pre-Girl Boss, pre-Me Too movement. Like, nobody was talking about how work was different for women, and nobody was really providing career advice from the angle of like, we're not going to gatekeep this advice. We're going to share what it's like to find a job, how to interview, how to be impressive to a hiring manager, because I've been on both sides of the hiring table. And at the time, that wasn't the norm. It was almost like the people who got a job were the people whose like parents' networks got them jobs, or the people whose like friend got them, or you got hired because they could see you as a good fit to get a beer with. And so, you know, we've obviously come a long way in the workspace since then. And so that was why I was very motivated to start Career Contessa. I felt like we need to democratize access to like career resources, and specifically help women, because there's nobody in the workplace that's helping women except for more women. And there weren't as many, you know, older women to look up to, or women, more senior women, I should say, to look up to. So that is like the kind of the long answer to your question. But Career Contessa, it was definitely built out of a need, my own passion, my own personal experience. And, you know, I would say the common thread that kind of weaves between all my different experiences is like, I'm very passionate about helping people build a fulfilling career and find work that fulfills them. And that looks a little different for everybody. So it's kind of one of those lofty passions that is like, how can you give someone the tools when you know it's going to, you know, there is no box that is going to be checked off by everybody, which is also the fun of the job too, is like, there's never going to just be like one, you know, solution that works for everybody.
It's so interesting to me, because as I think about the early decisions I made for my career, like, what? I'm a freaking 16-year-old who is boy crazy and had every color of hair under the sun. Like, what did I know at 16 years old about setting my life on any particular track, right? And coming up in this millennial generation of, you speak to it so specifically. Like, you can be and do all the things, right? Like, you can shatter ceilings. Like, every opportunity is yours.
Yeah.
And then a couple of things I feel like happened for me. One, I think that the reality of getting into some of these environments, like I'm fundraising right now, the amount of capital that is given to female startups is disgustingly, like, it's like 3% or something. So really, the opportunities are not all equally granted. Yeah. And so there's this whole piece of what we're told and what the reality of the biases and the dynamics in different environments are. And then there's also when I entered motherhood, and then everything became up for reevaluation again in a way that wasn't so linear. So come out of school, we go to our undergrad here, which is like college, university. Then I went to my master's. The next step was go to PhD to get my clinical psychology. And like, this was the track forward. I'm just plugging along, doing the right things that I should do. And then I became a mom in between my master's and my PhD that I will never go and take now. Thank God I found the light in between. And everything kind of, I don't know, I just questioned that track that I was on a little bit. And I don't think we even realize that we are on this. You talk about like towards the dream job or sort of following these myths towards something. I didn't realize it at the time.
I think when you don't have total clarity around what you want, you naturally look around and try to find examples. And so I think it's sort of this natural thing that people do where they're like, I'm not sure internally what I want. So let me look externally and kind of decide maybe what I should want or what I should go after. And for example, it's like, I don't know what I want. So I'll go get a master's because externally that looks good and sounds good. Like, what's the story I'm going to tell? You know, it doesn't sound great to be like, yeah, I don't totally know what I want and I don't know where to go. Like, that's a hard story to sell. And so I think the external stuff is just sometimes easier to grasp onto. And certainly the dream job myth is something where like anyone who, you know, is over the age of like 25 right now has probably been sold, you know, this lie of a dream job, which is that it's not just about a job. It's about a lifestyle that encompasses this work. And it's this like very fulfilling job that you have purpose and passion with and, you know, pays you really well and doesn't have a hellish commute or a toxic boss or a coworker you can't stand. And so not only are you being told like, hey, go out and get the dream job and it's your fault if you don't get this thing, but you're also being told like this absolutely exists. And like, so what makes people think is like, well, I don't have a dream job. I don't love every part of my job. So I better keep going out and looking for it. And that keeps you stuck in this whole like grass is always greener mindset. But again, the myth of the dream job, the irony of it is like you never end up in a dream job. You always just end up somewhere where you're thinking about where am I going to go next? And so you don't get to take advantage of the real growth opportunities that come from being, you know, mindfully part of something and like invested in that thing. You don't learn to live with discomfort, which is, hey, I have to lean into uncertainty. I have to do something I'm uncomfortable with. And so you don't become this impactful and valuable employee. You become very maybe indispensable where you work really hard and you're burnt out, but you don't know the impact you're making. And so it's almost like it just becomes like such a path to constantly not being fulfilled. And the irony of it is like the whole reason why you were doing this is because you so badly want to be fulfilled in what you're doing because you are ambitious. I felt this way very much in the beginning of my career where I would tell people I don't lack ambition. I just lack direction. And, you know, that was very hard for me because I felt like, you know, I have the thing that you can't teach, which is ambition, but how come I can't like put that in a positive place? You know, and I think what's interesting is, like I said, about the dream job and this lifestyle is like, well, the reality is you might have a hellish commute. You might have a toxic boss, but there's other parts of your job that are really good. And so maybe what you need to focus on is, okay, maybe I need to learn different communication styles, or maybe there's this interpersonal skill that I'm not that great at and I could be working on that. But it's like, there's no thought to say, well, nothing's perfect and you can work on certain things and, you know, improve it. Instead, it's the like that very much fixed mindset of something where it's like, no, I'll just go out and get a new thing. Mm-hmm. But you take yourself wherever you go. So what I find with most people when they're chasing the dream job, like I said, they just keep going, going, going.
Want to get smarter about your health but feel overwhelmed trying to separate fact from fiction? We hear a lot about gut health, microbiomes, and other nutrition topics, but taking the time to research these is exhausting, and there's a lot of misinformation out there. The Zoe Science and Nutrition podcast makes it so much easier to get the information you need. With the help of world-leading scientists, the podcast gives you research-based information so you can make informed choices for yourself without pressure and guilt. People are loving Zoe Science and Nutrition. Listener Stephanie's Apple review says the Zoe Science and Nutrition podcast is a life-changing, science-based, myth-busting podcast that's a must-listen for anyone who eats food and wants to understand how it affects their body. With the Zoe Science and Nutrition podcast, you can join Stephanie and millions of others accessing quality information about their health. Find it wherever you listen to podcasts. You want to break cycles and do better for your children, but that can be hard when you don't feel like you were equipped with the skills you need. I want you to know that even if you were raised in a home with yelling or one without apologies and emotional validation, you can learn those skills. One of the best places to start is by learning to repair with your child. When you apologize and take accountability and commit to doing things differently, you're not showing weakness, you're showing strength. You can break the generational cycles of parenting and model for your children how to do better, even after the moments that you're not proud of. On May 29th, for the first time in 2 years, Dr. Oshirin Areem, Psyched Mummy, and I are hosting a free live masterclass to teach you our three-step method for repairing with your child after you lose your cool. In this masterclass, we'll cover how to measure a secure bond with your child, understanding the power of repair, practical ways to repair with your child, and so much more. Join us live on May 29th at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific. And if you can't make it live, no worries. You'll get unlimited access to the playback so you can learn on your schedule. Register for the free masterclass at momwell.com/masterclass. That's momwell.com/masterclass. It reminds me of a moment that I had, I don't know, late 20s, early 30s, maybe, like where I realized that there actually was no destination that I was striving towards. It was a real gut-wrenching realization, right? For somebody who is like A-type, ambitious, wants to achieve, wants to check things off the list, got my undergrad, got my master's, like really sort of building this collection of things. You know, take all the steps to do all the things to get in that place, to get there and look around and be like, now what? Like, what the frick? What did
But that's how you were raised. No, you played the game perfectly, actually. And that's exactly like, that was the only destination for you based on the way you were raised. So in my book, I do a lot of research on like, what is unique about the millennial generation. And mind you, even if you're not a quote millennial, you were probably impacted by these things. And so it's almost like, you graduate or you're done checking the box and you come to the first unscheduled part of your life.
Yes.
And you don't know how to deal with that because you've never dealt with that. So it actually makes total sense that you had this moment. In fact, it's crazy that it didn't happen right away for you, like early 20s, because that is ultimately when you are raised the way the millennial generation was, which is like playing the game of school. Everybody gets a trophy. You know, for women especially, it was like, you can do it all, so you should do it all. Like all these things in this messaging that you didn't even realize that was basically coming your way constantly, not just messaging, but like messaging and behaviors and communication styles for you, like whatever, like there's a whole slew of them. But actually, if you think back and you're like, well, if I was raised like that, it actually makes total sense. I actually did exactly what I was supposed to do, which is I was supposed to come to this place where I thought 1 + 1 was going to equal 2, but the real world doesn't work like that, right? Like careers are very different than school. Careers don't come with a syllabus and a report card and you move from one grade to the next grade. Like they just don't work in that same way. And so you almost have to like relearn very important like parts of your life. Like again, leaning into the uncertainty, maybe not always knowing the path, not having a teacher or someone guide you to coach you into that, you know, and having to do some of those parts on your own. So it's no wonder that it's challenging. then that's like for everybody. Then you throw in the flip side of like being a parent and society's expectations for working mothers or just mothers in general and women in general and unpaid labor. Like, okay, that's a whole other like conundrum. So
yeah,
actually, no, I'm not surprised that you experienced that. And you know, the way society worked, you know, you did it exactly the way you should have.
Yeah. And it's such an interesting place to end up, like doing all the things you feel like you should. Mind you, I ended up with a career as a therapist. I love my clients. Like, it wasn't like a lack of fulfillment in the work I was doing necessarily, but for somebody who was used to striving, having, you know, quote unquote, arrived at that destination, then looking around being like, I'm like 30, 31, 32, like this is now day in and day out. Like what comes after this?
Yeah.
And really feeling a couple of different things. And I know you talk about how we're the most educated generation. Like, I feel like I wanted to just like collect degrees. I was going to go back for my PhD because I'm like, well, that must be what's next.
Yeah.
Or anytime I felt like a sense of being inferior or like that, what is that complex that's escaping me right now? Like feeling
imposter syndrome?
Yes. Like feeling imposter syndrome in a role or feeling novice in something because I'm just the new person on the block. Wanting to dive into a training or a certification. Like there was something that I noticed during this time where I would fill my insecurities with training and designations, very common in the field of work that I do also. But I didn't actually in any of those times back away. And this is what motherhood bought me some space to do on mat leave. We're very fortunate to be able to take time. I took 12 months after each of my boys. And to be like, I really feel drawn to marketing. Here I am, a freaking master's in a psychotherapist and feeling like digital marketing is my jam. Like this could be really fun. And actually starting to look inward at like what was pulling me in and what I was really interested in. How can I blend this passion for serving and helping people, like what you were describing, with this draw to digital marketing and social media and putting and positioning information in a certain way and digital content and all of that. And ultimately, after having some of that space and reevaluating and kind of nurturing some of those little quiet interests that would have been absurd at, you know, a year before that, I found my way, founder of a freaking company, totally not, I'm using my degree every day and all the experience that I have, but I could not have even fathomed what my day-to-day would look like. And I don't know, filling with all of the certificates versus buying yourself the space to look inward, like never thought to pause and do that.
Yeah. Well, it's harder work, right? It's so much harder to look inward and do the internal work because there's no grade. There's no, this is the right direction to go. There's no clicking completion and getting a certificate at the end of something. The internal work sort of never ends, whereas like there is that dopamine hit of like, I finished this course, you know, I got this certificate, I know how to do this thing. And so I think as humans, part of our well-being is like we have this need to kind of like make progress with things and do things and feel accomplished. And so I obviously think there are ways to do that with the internal work, but it's almost like you're not taught how to do that because again, you're taught so well how to be a student and how to go through, you know, an educational type course or certificate or online, whatever it is, but you're not really taught how to like name your emotions. What's the emotion you're feeling and why are you feeling it? What does this mean? Like, how do you feel? Or like thinking about instead of like, what's the job title I'm going for? It's like, how do I want to feel when I wake up in the morning? People think of this as like really woo woo work. And it's like, look, I'm all about type A with a side of woo. Like I like the mix of both of them. The type A person gets stuff done and I appreciate that. And the woo woo person though is able to maybe do that internal work that actually allows them to eventually get to a place where, so a lot of people will say, if I don't want a dream job, what should I be pursuing? And it's like, well, I would recommend a quote, good enough job. And all I mean by that is a job that doesn't ask you to give up your life for work, because then all you're doing is like swapping one vice for another vice, right? And so, you know, it's good to be a well-rounded person and have hobbies and not be burnt out from your work and not be stressed about everything. Like it's good to have healthy boundaries with that stuff. We just sometimes have to do that internal work to get there. And like I said, there's a reason why people kind of just look for the external thing, because you get immediate gratification, or like you get a lot of gratification, and it's something that makes sense to other people. So being able to go to the cocktail party and say, I work at XYZ company, is a big ooh and ah. And like your identity gets very attached to that, versus being able to go to a cocktail party and be like, I don't really care if anybody cares what I do for a living, or I don't actually want to talk about what I do for a living. I want to talk about other things because I have other interests outside of work, you know, that kind of thing. So yes, I understand you having that moment, and I understand like why you found comfort in doing additional trainings and education, because that's what you knew also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It makes me think about the moms who are listening, who maybe are home with littles right now, or maybe have taken like a gap in their career, or feel like they've put their career on the back burner for the support of maybe their partner if they're the primary earner and things like that. And I'm sort of scanning my brain thinking about the different reasons why people go back to work. And, you know, health insurance for the birth of a second child, for just sheer cost of living, needing to be a two-income household, to get a break from being 100% caregiver 100% of the time. There are lots of really valid and practical reasons that we find work that are not so like self-actualizing. And that is 100% okay and amazing to do for our family, and in itself can serve a function for us, right? And I like what you're saying. Like, I have a lot of friends, and I've had a lot of conversations. Sometimes my partner and I still have these conversations, like, wouldn't I love to just clock in and out of Starbucks some days? Like, I used to work at Starbucks when I was in high school and in my undergrad. And I was like, that life was a much simpler life. Like, when I could just, it was someone else's company. There was no calls in the middle of the night of things going down. Like, you know, it was totally different. And there is a simplicity in that that aligns with my values now that I can't, at this stage of the company and where we're at, I just can't, you know, fulfill. And there's space for that. Like, I have girlfriends who love that because they want to cottage every weekend in the summer with their family, and they want to do all the activities and all the sports and all the things. So when I step back and think about why we're struggling or what we're contemplating, I would even be curious, like, what are we seeking? What are we seeking to fill? Like, what needs do we have? And obviously, like you said, if we can enjoy that and have boundaries in our life, and it can feel like it doesn't just absolutely drain us every day, it can add to our life, but it doesn't have to be, I don't know, perfection. I think that we think that it will be this perfect fit, like you were alluding to before. And it just rarely is ever that.
Yes. The grass is not greener. It's just different grass, right? And I love this quote. I interviewed this woman on my podcast, and she was like, the grass is green wherever you water it. And some people would probably argue with this metaphor, like, well, what if you have toxic soil? Yada, yada. Like, okay, like, stick with me here. And like, let's not get into the details of in that way. But like, meaning, where you invest and spend your energy, like, you know, unless it is a completely toxic job. But like, for example, for the person who is, you know, prioritizing their family right now and not in the workplace, that's fantastic. You know, but I guess something that I would keep in mind is like, is there a way for you to continue keeping your skills sharp or your network sharp? Or, and it doesn't mean like you have, by skills, you have to be taking online courses. It's thinking about, okay, when I volunteer in my kids' class, I'm doing this, like, just like keeping that in the back of your mind about what that might look like. And then the other thing is, obviously, maybe there's consulting work or fractional work or part-time work or a job share if you wanted to dip your toe back into it. I think a lot of women do go back to work for a lot of practical reasons. There are also women who take on work on the side because it fulfills them. Mm-hmm. They're able to get something from that they don't get from, you know, and I'm not saying I'm a mama. It's the best job ever, but it's also the hardest job. Like, sometimes I'm like, going to work is so much easier than working with my kids, you know?
Yeah.
So it's each person their own, gets to make their own decisions for their life. I also think we're in a time when, you know, jobs are not, again, like this 9-to-5 work in an office every day. Like, there's so many different types of jobs and they look very different. And so like, maybe a good exercise for people is like, if you could design your career exactly how you want to go, what does it look like? A really good book is Essentialism. Well, obviously my book Power Moves will help, but then also Essentialism, which is all about like picking like where are you going to focus and how life is includes trade-offs. And so something I also would encourage people to think about is like, you can also pick a chapter, you know, this is just a chapter of your life. Maybe you have young kids at home. Maybe you have kids that are in middle school. Like these are going to be different chapters. For example, my mom was a stay-at-home mom. And then when I got into middle school, she wanted to go back into the workplace and she started to gradually dip her toe. She thought she wanted to do health stuff. Now she works in property management. She absolutely loves it. And it gives her this huge confidence boost for her to kind of have her own thing. And I think that's really important for her. But, you know, those are different chapters. She probably wouldn't have been a great property manager back in the 90s because she really wanted to be at home with us and had the privilege of doing that. So I don't really know where I'm going with this other than to say like careers look different for everybody. And I think thinking about what are your top priorities, what are your top focus areas, and then what trade-offs are you willing to live with? If you go work for a corporation and you are in an office, maybe that works for you because having physical separation between you and your family is really important and you have really reliable childcare. Maybe for you, you really want to do consulting work or fractional work or start your own company. And, you know, like, so again, like, what are the trade-offs? Nothing is perfect. Mm-hmm. It's about which trade-offs are you willing to live with? And maybe even considering like, okay, well, how am I going to feel when I go back and work for a company and I can't pick up my kid every day at 3 o'clock from school? Is that something like, is that a trade-off I'm willing to make? Or is that like the most important thing? So therefore, yeah, maybe having like a shift job that is, you know, 10 to 1 or something like that, or 10 to 2 works better for you. So again, everyone's situation is unique. And I think giving some thought to that is important.
Mom rage often leads us to feeling ashamed. But the truth is that our rage doesn't mean we're bad moms. In fact, anger is a sign from our bodies that our needs aren't being met. As moms and therapists, Dr. Ashiri Naream, Psyched Mommy, and I understand mom rage. We know that we all lose our cool sometimes. And we also know that with the right tools and strategies in place, those moments happen less often. We've teamed up and combined our years of experience to create All the Rage, Raising Kids with Less Anger and More Connection, a course designed to be your go-to resource for preventing and handling your anger. We dive into what causes your anger, how it impacts your body, how to reframe your thinking, and how to stay calm in triggering moments. And because we are all human, we also include strategies for repairing after we inevitably lose our cool. In honor of Maternal Mental Health Week, you can save $20 on the course with promo RAGE20 this week only. Don't miss out on your chance to save and make a positive change. Head to momwell.com/rage and save with code RAGE20. That's momwell.com/rage, code RAGE20. It brings me back to the quote when we're talking about being able to do it all. There was actually a really interesting quote that I noted here from the book. We are a generation of women who were told we can do anything, and instead we heard we had to be everything. And how this myth is so entrenched of how we need to be and do it all. But then it's so interesting. And there's another quote that I've heard that Dr. Sophie Brock had shared with me, and it's credited to another author that I cannot wrap my brain around right now. But it's essentially that we're told as women to be and do it all, like you can go and get everything. And then when we enter motherhood, we're told that we must give everything and sacrifice everything to that role. That was a like head spin for me, because somebody who was constantly like in school, constantly plowing forward, achieving, doing all these things, I hit a mat leave, which I'm very privileged to be able to take and to have. And then I sat there covered in spit up and watched my husband gain like 3 or 4 different certifications and licenses and push towards promotions in his role and shift towards us, like prioritizing his schedule and his income because I was on reduced income, and being like, what the hell is this? Like, what? Yeah. This is not what I thought motherhood looked like. I don't know what I thought, but like also trying at the same time to be this amazing first-time mom. And So retroactively now, having this platform with all the things that I've learned with my youngest now being 5 and my oldest turning 9, that I defaulted, we both sort of defaulted into these gender roles in our home where I became kind of by proxy location because I was closer, and also by default, the pickup, the contact, the appointment coordinator, the all the things. So I had to prioritize flexibility or things in my career in a different way that my partner didn't even consider because of like the roles that we fell into in the home.
Yeah.
And the more that we've had really open conversations and challenged some of these unconscious assumptions of who owns what, the more that I could put the prioritizing of my career and my time on equal playing field to his. And now he's like called all the school doesn't even know who I am. I walk in and they confirm that I'm my kid's mom because they know him by name and they wave at him. And he's, you know, the parent that does drop off, pick up and all the in-betweens. And I'm sharing this story because I think that a lot of our career choices are primed or factored around being defaulted into a caregiving role. And if you've got a partner who's open and willing to have conversations with you about this, and we don't just auto-assume some of this, we might be able to prioritize our career a little bit differently or divide out some of this work. And I know I auto-defaulted myself into it just trying to be a good mom, but we can challenge those assumptions, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Is there anything else in terms of the myth of having it all and how we approach our careers before we lean into the power moves section?
No, I think we should do power moves. Okay. I think everyone probably agrees that dream jobs are a major myth and they're over it.
Okay. So your book is called Power Moves. What do you mean by that? And I learned that there are some small, medium, and large examples through reading.
Yeah, absolutely. When you're creating a new word for people, you have to really come up with a clear definition of what it is. And so what I think of power moves, actions, behaviors, you know, interpersonal relationships, again, like responsibilities that you have in your life, things that are driven by being proactive versus being reactive. So again, a move, right? You understand what making a move means. Mm-hmm. Most of the time when people are making career moves, they are reacting to something. I lost my job and now I'm job searching versus I'm always kind of looking for a job. Reacting in that, oh, they offered me a promotion. I'm just going to take it. I'm not thinking about, is this what I really want to do with my career or is this the path I want to grow? So that is sort of the traditional way that people kind of make career moves. A power move is rooted in being very intentional and being very proactive about what you're going after and sort of why. And what that means is sort of the difference in the people is someone who is probably playing a very active or proactive role in their career development. So as they're going through their career, they're thinking about, okay, intentional networking. I'm thinking about intentional career growth. I'm thinking about intentional financial moves, you know, meaning I'm going to negotiate versus reactive is like, they offered me this and it's, you know, it's really good money. It's more than I'm making now. I guess I'm going to take it. And then 3 years later, you learn, like, even though it was more money than you were making before, it was a lot of responsibilities. And actually, the guy next to you is doing the exact same job and he's being paid $30,000 more because he negotiated, things like that. So I am a big proponent of people developing their careers with this power moves approach and this power moves mindset. And it really starts with sort of a mindset. And then there's the actual actions you're taking and the behaviors that you go about. You know, it's the person who at work doesn't say, okay, that's not my job. It's the person who's like, I'll do the job that's needed. Where's the learning opportunity for me in this? Maybe that growth mindset versus that fixed mindset, embracing your ability to learn and having the confidence to do that versus being like, wait, I've never done this before and it's not really my job responsibility. So I'm going to pause on that. So power moves is an approach. It's a mindset and it's the actual actions that you take to be proactively and intentionally building your career on your terms.
Mm-hmm. And I really like that you broke it down even to like the daily small examples, because I think that when I hear power moves, we go to those big like movements in career or those big places, right? But having these little, one of the ones that stood out to me was not allowing yourself to be interrupted in a meeting. Like, can I please finish what I was saying before you interrupt or something like that? Just like little things each day that you can do to position yourself in this way and kind of keep this top of mind for yourself, I thought was really helpful.
Yeah, I mean, I think the idea of power moves is that you very rarely just run into the office and quit your job, right? It's a thousand little things that lead up to that decision. But we don't think of those as being power moves, the small things. We only think of these big moments that you see in the movies or like the external things as being power moves worthy of talking about, celebrating, proactively thinking of. But what I found, and when I obviously through my work at Career Contest, I get to talk to a lot of successful and fulfilled women in their work. I interviewed a ton of women for the book and I asked them, what makes someone successful and fulfilled, right? You can have all the money in the world, but if you hate your job, I'm not really interested in that. I really want to find the person who, like, yeah, externally has enough to feel safe and secure, doesn't have to be the highest paycheck or the coolest job title, but like you're fulfilled in what you do. And constantly, over and over again, people would talk about, I was really intentional early on about peer networking. I was really intentional early on about advocating my work. I was really intentional early on about speaking up in meetings. I'm really intentional about, like, I don't follow people on social media that are, it's unhealthy for me to follow. So again, I was like, wow, they have these big power move moments, but it all starts back in the small power moves and the medium power moves and those stepping stones that they create to have those bigger moments. And then when they do have those big moments, not only are they proactively making them, but they're very secure in them. The decision-making is quick. It's thoughtful. You know, they're human. Sometimes they maybe pick the wrong thing. But if they have a mistake, their go-to isn't to be an inner critic. It's to say, okay, I made this decision based on these facts and the facts have changed. So I'm not mad at myself. I'm going to, you know, find something else. And now I have more clarity about what I want that's different next time. Right. And so again, it's a completely different approach and mindset versus, again, going through life and just chasing those big power moves and not paying attention to the work that happens before them.
Mm-hmm. And I think that as somebody who interviews and hires a lot of different people, or promotes people into new roles, like those are the things that make you stand out as some of these star players, right? Like wanting to hear feedback to be able to improve and grow and taking initiative so that if there was a mistake or a problem, I'm hearing about it alongside the solution that goes with it that's going to reconcile it. Like some of these things where then when there is room for promotion, it's top of mind, right? That this is your go-to person in this area. So it's really kind of sowing those seeds and planting those seeds along the way.
Yeah. And not just when you need them, you know, it's being open to job searching conversations and quote, always be job searching, not just when you decided, okay, I found out so-and-so is making more and now I'm going to do this. It's the whole concept of like, it's good to do things before you need to do them, because when you need something, you can't control, maybe you can't control the timing, but you know how long it takes to find a new job, but you can control your actions leading up to that. So I also think power moves is a really healthy approach because it's also very focused on what you have control over, right, which is yourself and your actions and your behaviors and your mindset. And oftentimes we're told if there's any discomfort, like, you know, get rid of it as quickly as possible. My mom loves football. And so, you know, the quarterback, he has to sit in the pocket before he can find the right person to throw the ball. It's an extremely uncomfortable position to be in the pocket where you have these huge linebackers coming for you and they're going to tackle you. But sometimes you have to hang in the pocket a little bit longer for the right opportunity. Is it comfortable there? No. Is it, you know, are you not totally sure if it's going to happen? Possibly. But, you know, it's also how you throw the ball to the person, you know, and they get the touchdown, right? Like that is something to think about, is like hanging in the pocket a little longer of that discomfort and that uncertainty doesn't mean that you're going the wrong direction. It doesn't mean that it's not going to end well. But so many of us were raised with this, you know, belief that like, if you have any discomfort, like get rid of it right away. Like discomfort is bad. And actually discomfort, uncertainty, the ability to adapt, these are all things that we see later on actually make really strong workers. You know, it's very much linked to a growth mindset. It's linked to less failure because it's like, okay, if something's not working, I can adapt and pivot more quickly versus kind of stick to something when it's not working. And so, you know, I use that as a metaphor, but like it works for life too. Like, okay, if you're in the pocket of discomfort right now, that doesn't mean like that you're not going the right direction or something good isn't going to come, you know?
I think it's such a great reframe. And as we think about leaving listeners who are really resonating with this, like leaving them with something and a place to start if we're trying to reintegrate into our career, or maybe you're wanting to make a change because motherhood has challenged some of your values or adjusted them or reorganized them. When that process gets uncomfortable, doesn't mean that that is a dead end or a sign to not keep going in that area. And being a novice or new at something for me is like my biggest like ick. Like I want to dive under the table. Like I hate that feeling of being new at something and the whole room sort of knows what's going on, like that novice feeling. But we don't hang out there very long, especially if we continue with that power moves mindset and we're sharpening it and doing the things that we need to do each day to gain that confidence and being kind to ourselves along the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today and share some of the amazing work that you're doing. It just so described my journey as a millennial. So I feel like as people would go through power moves, they would really resonate just with all of the track we've been on. And now we're here like, what the heck is going on? So such guidance for them. Where can they learn more from you, engage with your community, get the book, all the things?
Yeah, absolutely. So CareerContessa.com is sort of home base for everything. My podcast is called The Career Contessa Podcast. My book is called Power Moves. You can get it anywhere where books are sold. But like I said, you can go to CareerContessa.com and everything will be there. And then follow me or connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm there every day. I love connecting with people on LinkedIn. It's just Lauren McGoodwin on LinkedIn. You'll find me.
Yeah. And we'll link all of that in the show notes so that people can easily navigate to you for support in adjusting to reentering the workforce or leveling up their skills and things. So thank you again for joining us. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you.
When I read Lauren's book, I experienced so many light bulb moments about my career path. This feeling I kept getting of searching for more and getting certifications to try and fill a hole, and how important it was to take a step back and really think about what I wanted outside of the checklist presented to me when I was growing up. This is something I hear from so many moms who started really doing the internal self-work after having a baby. The more they learn about themselves, the more they often realize that they lacked self-awareness, boundary setting, or even an understanding of their own needs before they became moms. It can be hard to come to this realization and wonder what to do with it. But the good news is that we can take this awareness and use it to either pivot our work to something based on our internal needs, priorities, and values, or use Lauren's advice to create fulfillment where we are, if it is that good enough job she had mentioned. This idea of the dream job reminds me of the idea of the one we talked about in episode 173 with Vanessa Bennett, and also of the concept of the one best friend in episode 221 with Danielle Byard-Jackson. These concepts that we are fed really create all or nothing thinking that so often clashes with reality. And when we step away from that and start to see the nuances and areas of gray, we set ourselves up for greater happiness and fulfillment, both as moms and individuals. I would love to hear what you thought of this episode. Send me a DM or take a moment to leave a review. And if you're struggling with feeling like you can't prioritize your time or your career, that you're struggling navigating working mom guilt, or are unsure of what it is you really want or need, working with a mom therapist can help. Head to momwell.com/booking to book a free 15-minute virtual consult today. That's momwell.com/booking. I'll see you right back here, same time, same place next week, where I'm being joined by Joanne Crone, founder of No Guilt Mom, to discuss how we can break away from mom guilt. You don't want to miss it. I'll see you right back here next week. I can't even begin to tell you how happy and honored I am that you choose to spend your time here with me each week. If you're looking for resources or links from today's show, or you need a refresh on anything we've talked about, visit our show notes. You can find the link in the episode description, or you can head directly to momwell.com/learningcenter. To join the Momwell email list and be the first one to know about new episode drops, insider info, or freebies, head to momwell.com/newsletter. Join me next week
Until then, remember that you have to be well to mom well.